Hi, my name's Stan. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to our newcomers. We're glad you're here. And just wanted to let you know that, you know, you're welcome here. We want you to stay here. And we want you to stick around long enough to hear the message. And that message is hope, and that you can recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. No matter how bad you might think you have it, you can recover and get sober and live a good and decent life. That's what I found here. Welcome to out-of-town visitors. We're glad you're here also. Okay, I wasn't nervous until this very moment. There's something I want to read real quick just before I start sharing. It's out of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know if anybody knows what this book is here in this room, but this is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the program is outlined in the first 164 pages. And that's how it was brought to me, and that's how I got it here in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I just want to read something that always made sense to me, and it's the forward to the first edition. If you've got your book, please break it out. No, I'm just kidding. And it just says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose for this book right here. It says, for them, we hope that these pages will prove so convincingly that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experience will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. And thank God it said for all. It didn't single anybody out. Alcohol does not single anybody out. You know, it's going to take everybody. You know, it's not just, you know, certain people. It's not just homeless people. It's not just poor people. You know, it's going to affect everybody in one way or another. And it took a long time for me to realize that, because I was the kind of alcoholic that would drink and be like, I don't know why everybody's all mad. I'm only hurting me. I'm not hurting anybody else. Selfish and self-centered. I couldn't see that. I had no way of seeing who exactly I'm hurting. And on top of that, nor did I even care to wonder who I was hurting. Because it was all about me. You know, I'm a real alcoholic. Consequences do not get my attention at all. You tell me you're going to lock me up. You tell me you're going to throw away the key. I'm like, so what? You're threatening me with a good time. But you tell me, hey, we need you to get a job. We need you to start paying bills. I'm like, whoa, what the fuck is that? Like, no way. No. Change a diaper? What? Those aren't my kids. You know what I mean? Anyways. So that's what showed up here. Man, I'm freaking totally grateful for the life that I have today. You know? And earlier today, me and my girlfriend, we went out to Santa Barbara, and I went to go see that old park. You hear me talking about that park? I went back by that park, man, to go check it out. And I was like totally going down memory lane, and had to make sure the plugins were still on the side of the restroom. And sure enough, they were still there. And I kept wondering, how come there's not like any other homeless people around, man? This is like a paradise right here. And that's how I felt when I was there. I was on my own little island unto myself. You know, and so I was grateful to go there and walk down memory lane. And I got to remember a friend of mine, that the reason why I ended up there, and that guy's no longer with us. He fell asleep at the wheel. You know, he'd been doing too much of whatever he was doing. He fell asleep at the wheel and went head on with another car, you know, right outside of Lompoc. And he was a good friend of mine. And we passed by that spot coming through Lompoc. I went to go see my grandkids, you know, but, you know, walking down that memory lane, I don't ever want to forget where I came from. I got a great forgetter. You know, chapter 5, it tells me, remember, we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful. And I think those other three words are the main thing. It's remember. Because I can't bring with sufficient force the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. I cannot. If I'm wrapped in here, I'm going to forget about everything that's good, decent, and positive in my life. I got to be in tune with what's going on right here with Stan. I'm totally grateful. I feel like I'm on borrowed time right now. Like I should have died a long time ago. You know, I should have died. Man, I shouldn't even be here. Like, how the hell did I get blessed with this life that I have today? And I'll tell you what, it's because I woke up. I had no idea what was going to happen May 30th, 2013, but by the end of the day, I had a strong desire to want to stay sober more than anything in this world. You know, it wasn't brought to my attention, but for some reason, God lined up all these people to get me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that night at 8 o'clock meeting at a book study. You know, I called up my first sponsor because he was there at that meeting. I had no idea what was going to happen that day, but I called him up. I sent him a text this morning. I said, you know what? I just want to pay homage to the man who gave me a chance from day one, you know, and I'm forever grateful for that. You know, I'm forever grateful for my sponsor that I have today. I've watched my sponsor since 2001. And after my first sponsor coming back this time, after he moved away, I went and I asked him because he's one of them people. He's one of them fine examples in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous who comes in here, goes to meetings every day. Like every, I don't know why he goes to meetings every day, but he goes to meetings every day. He helps out the newcomer and he's book oriented. And I needed someone like that, you know. And so I'm grateful, you know. A lot of people don't know this, but I was born and raised in Santa Maria. I don't know if anybody knew that information. You know, and I'm just going to be real brief about, you know, about what it was like. You know, I grew up here in Santa Maria, and my mother and my father, they decided to split up. My mother, she used to live right down the road over here back in the 70s and the 80s when it was like a middle class, but now it's like the ghetto. But anyways, you know, it was a really nice neighborhood. And then my father, where he lived out was in the projects. I had my sister and my nieces and my nephew who lived there. And so, you know, that was like my family. I go to school on the nice side of town, but my playground was the projects, you know. And so I got the best of both worlds growing up. You know, I got, you know, this real, I don't know what the hell you want to call it. And then I got over here where people are doing shit that I started liking, right? And so I was really mixed up as a kid, though. You know, I didn't know what was right from wrong, you know, because in both sides of the family, I had alcoholics and I had addicts, you know. Then I go to the other side, I got gang members and drug dealers, you know, gang members and drug dealers. And so I was really like, I didn't know exactly where to fit in or how do I fit in or what's going on. But I liked watching them do what they do, you know. And so I caught on to that, you know. My father, he liked hiring trios, and so they'd have mariachis and trios, and they'd party and drinking, and so I kind of liked that lifestyle too, you know? So I was really mixed up, you know? I was really, man, this thing, I didn't know how to grow up, and then on top of that, my parents were like a lot older. My mom was 40, and my dad was 43 when they had me, so they were already kind of like, you know what, just, yeah, whatever. Street lights, come on, come home, all right? You know, so I had to learn shit on my own. You know, I didn't have anybody there. Yeah, I had a brother, and he would always pick on me, so I'd be like, fuck you. But all his friends liked me, so I was like, hey, what's up, you know? So I was really mixed up as, you know, growing up, and like I said, I had to learn things on my own, you know? With me, when I first started drinking, and I first started drinking and smoking weed, and consequences came like that. They started happening in my life, you know? At 11 years old, I decided, you know, I was already drinking and smoking weed. I decided to steal my mom's car. You know, I didn't know any better, you know. She took off for the night. The keys were there. Hey, what's up? And I went to the projects, picked up all my homies, and woo, next thing you know, yeah, I'm in trouble, you know. I don't know any better. I just didn't know any better. And I kind of learned right from wrong. And I was sharing with the sponsee the other day, you know, when you're a kid, you know, when you're real little, you know, you learn what to do and what not to do. Like, put your hand on the stove. You're like, oh, shit. Like, I'm not going to do that again, right? So we learned some basics right from wrong, you know? And something happens. Something along the way, there's a radio station that comes on. I don't know if anybody's ever heard that radio station. It's called Cape Fuck It. And for some reason, that radio station starts getting loud. There's a lot of bass, a lot of trouble. I'm like, hey, it's got a rhythm. I'm like, what's up, you know? And I stopped listening to the good intuition, like, hey, Stan, don't go do that, man. Don't go punch that guy in the face. What are you doing? You know you're going to get in trouble if you do this. You know you're going to get in trouble if you're smoking in the bathroom, you know, at school. You know you're going to get in trouble. And, man, I just tuned out that station, and I started listening to K-Fuck It, and I started getting in trouble. Started getting suspended. You know, I'm getting kicked out of school. You know, I just started doing all the wrong shit. And I didn't know, man. I didn't know right from wrong. You know, so as I'm growing up too, I'm growing up around a lot of older people. And I learned that, you know, when grown folks are talking, you shut the fuck up, you hear? You know, I started hearing that. And I started peeping game from all the older people, you know? And still, inside, I want to do right, but I just don't know how, you know? I did the bare minimum when it came to school. I showed up. That's it. I just showed up, man. And in high school, they just said, you know what? You got to go, dude. Like, no. Like, you can't be here, you know? And they sent me to continuation school where all my heroes were there, you know what I mean? All my good friends, you know? Oh, man. But for some reason, there was always something that told me, like, right from wrong, and I would follow that sometimes, you know? I had some friends that were like, hey, we're going to go break in this house and do this, and I'm like, hey, I'm cool right here. Like, when you guys are done doing all that, come back and chill. Like, you know what I mean? And so my friends started graduating into higher levels of, you know, of their development. They started going to juvenile hall. They started going to camp. They started going to YA. And here I was still at home. But something happened. I'm going to back up a little bit. At the age of 13, I made a decision. You know, I'm hanging out with all these older guys, and I made a decision that, you know, I'm going to try cocaine for the very first time. And I apologize for any purist in the house, but, you know, drugs are part of my story. I'm not going to get way into that, but, you know, that's what happened to me, you know? And so that's why I started growing up a lot faster, because I started hanging out with these older guys that were doing a little bit harder stuff than I'm normally doing. You know, I would go to school and I'd be sitting in class, and I, like, my peers had no idea of the shit that I was doing, you know? And so I always felt like I was up on game. They might be smart, but no, I'm like way up there. I'm like way smarter than them. Like, you know what I mean? I was like, it was just, you know, I just didn't know how to deal with my emotions, my feelings, my fears. And I had a lot of fears back then, you know. I would fear that these people would know me and they would call me on it. And so I had to be a certain way. I had to act a certain way. And you know, it talks about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about fears. We can classify that with stealing, you know. And that fear that I was just robbing people of who I really was. I was robbing myself of who I really wanted to be. I had no idea. And so I just kept living this life. And there was a period from probably when I was about 15 to like all the way till I was almost like 19, where I didn't have any intimate relationships with any girls, any women or anything like that. I was just like, this is way more important. Like, no, I'm cool. Like, why are you calling me? Like, don't call me. Like, no, I don't want to talk to you. Like, this is more important. Drinking, getting loaded, doing cocaine, that's way more important than having any type of intimate relationship with anybody. You know? I was already at that age. I was already locking myself in the room. I'm locked in the room. I don't want to talk to nobody. And no, who's calling? What? I don't know who that is. You know, my mom's calling. No, I'm not here. Like, you know, like, she's at work wondering if I took out the trash. And I'm like, I'm not here. I'm telling my friends to answer the phone and tell them. You know, they're like, well, what are you doing there? You know, anyways, I didn't know how to deal with life. And I thought the way I was coping with life was the right way. You know, where it talks about, you know, the alcoholic lives, you know, he doesn't live any other life. He doesn't see any other life. And I didn't know any other life other than this. You know, and it was just a constant battle that I just kept fighting, you know, and that radio station kept going off. But there was always that little intuition that would tell me, Stan, you're doing way too much. You're doing way too much. Like, you need to slow down. And there was like very short intervals where I would slow down, like maybe a couple hours, you know, or maybe a day to the most, you know. But I just didn't know how to slow down. You know, I just kept living this life, you know, and it just got rougher and rougher and rougher. You know, I started growing up, you know, but by the time I did turn, right when I turned 18, I dropped out of high school and I went to El Puente. I told my teacher, you know, F you, you know, I'm out of here. And I moved to the Bay Area because the stuff that I was enjoying was a lot more accessible for a guy like me who needs it right now at any hour. And so I moved out there. I lasted like 2 months and I ended up calling my mom. Oh, come and get me. I can't live out here no more, you know. And my mom still had no, you know, and I always share this, that was the first time I had that woman bail me out of a situation. You know, and that was just the beginning of calling my mom. Every time I'm in trouble, I'm calling my mom. My mom's bailing me out of this. You know, I'm a mama's boy. You know, I'm a real tough guy who still lived at mom's. I was one of those kind of people, you know. Real tough guy who still lived at mom's, you know. And so I just kept spiraling. And I would get these little short intervals, like I said, like, hey, you know what? Yeah, maybe I need to change. Man, I know. And I keep going back to it, you know. I started going to jail, and that was just a snowball effect for me, you know. I go in jail once, man, and I get in there, and I'm like, my first time, I'm doing a whole year. And for me, you know, I'm like every other person who goes to jail. I find God, you know what I mean? I found God, and I was like, what was he doing in there, you know? I don't know, but I left him there, you know? Because what started happening is they're like, tell me to roll it up. And I'm like, I'm rolling everything up but my Bible and, you know, but God. And they would tell me, hey, brother, go out there and find God. You know, I'm like, I already found him. And I'm cool, you know. And that just started a whole thing of me going in and out. And as much as I hated jail, I just kept going back. You know, I just kept going back. And I started having these kids. And the kids were getting... They just kept coming, like, I'm what the hell? Like, where are you guys coming from? Oh my God. You know, and after I had my first daughter, my oldest, I would always think that I want to live this good life, you know? And I would always have these dreams about us, like, living in on a farm, and we're living off the land, and we're chilling, and we're going out and doing a whole bunch of stuff. But it was such a fantasy, man. But you know what? It could have been a reality. It could have been a reality. But I just couldn't let go of the stuff that I was doing, you know? So I'm a high school dropout. I don't know any better. You know, I couldn't get a job. You know, my first job was at Wendy's, and that didn't last very long. But, you know, I really tried. I really tried to hold a job. I really tried to be a father and a boyfriend, and it just didn't work. But I had a crazy idea in 97. I was in jail. I just had my second daughter, and I had this crazy idea. Maybe we should get married. And, oh, man, that was a crazy idea. I don't know what the hell I was thinking, but... you know, things were going good, though. You know, I got baptized. But one thing I realized, I got baptized. There was never enough holy water to wash away everything that was going on in my head. It didn't. It was a good bath, yeah. But it just never washed this thing away. It never washed away all the selfishness, the self-centeredness, the alcoholism. You know, it just didn't wash that stuff away. You know, and so things went bad again. And we moved out to Oklahoma, and we didn't last that long out in Oklahoma either. And the marriage didn't last either. Maybe it was part of me, but there was something wrong with that woman. And that's just being real. I'm not going to talk bad about her, but you know, just things didn't work out. And I tried my hardest to just be there for my children. And the hardest thing I ever did was to have to leave them out there and come back. And things just got really bad. And I'm not going to say nothing bad about that woman, but what ended up happening was I got custody of them. And I'll just leave that part right there. You know, I ended up getting custody of them kids later on down the road. But, you know, I came back to California, and then I get another bright idea, you know. I just need a girlfriend, right? Okay, I got a wife way in Oklahoma. Maybe I need, you know, yeah, I'm a womanizer, whatever. Anyway, so what happened was... I ended up meeting another woman, and she ended up getting pregnant, and we had the apple of my eye. That was my Rosie. That little girl was just everything to me, you know. She was everything to me, and I was just like, man, this is all I need, you know. I'm going to settle down and be the best guy I can be. And I wish I can say I did, but I couldn't. But I know everything, majority, big part of me just wanted to be the best dad I can be to that little girl. You know, that little girl ended up getting leukemia. But I'll tell you what, man, if it wasn't for having that little girl, I would have never made it into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. She was born April 5th of 2001, and I was on the run, and I was just like, man, you know what? I need to clean this up because I really want to be a father to this little girl. And I couldn't get, you know, I couldn't turn myself in, but thank God they showed up. April 28th of 2001 was my first sober date, and I made it to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I made it in the rooms because I'm in jail, and I'm, you know, hey, Jesus, what's up? Let's chill. You know, I'm kicking it with Jesus again, and I'm in jail, and I'm calling, I'm talking to my baby's mom, and she's telling me about this program, and I was like, oh, no. So let me back up. My first experience with coming to a meeting was in '94, and I had to do this drug diversion class, and they told me, okay, here's a court guard. Go to this meeting. I was like, what the hell is a meeting? Like, what? We want you to go to AA. I'm like, whoa, that's weird. Like, isn't that for alcoholics? You know what I'm saying? I had no idea. And so they sent me to this meeting, and I go in this meeting. It was at this place called Casa Seca. Now it's known as Lazy Days. And I walk in the room, and the room is just smoked out. Man, I thought I was at the billiards. Like, back in the day, the billiards, there was smoke. And I heard these two guys sharing, and they were sharing some really good stuff, right? And you know, at the time, I was thinking, you know what? Maybe I do got a problem. You know what? What these guys are talking about makes sense. Maybe I do got a problem. And so after the meeting, I went to go stand by them and rob their conversation because I didn't know, what do you do now? You stop? Then what? You know, it seems like life's going to be boring. And so I went to go rob these guys' conversation, and I was like, you know, so what do you do now? Like, you know, what's... Now that you're sober, you stop drinking, you stop using, what do you do? And both of them looked at each other and started laughing. And I thought they were laughing. I was like, what are you guys laughing at, eh? No, but, you know, I was like, and they're like, we're about to go get high right now, go drink. And I was like, oh my God, are you freaking kidding me? Man, because what they were sharing in the meeting made sense. And I told them, fuck it, come on, let's go. You know, and I went to go party with them, and that was it. I would never come back to this place because everyone's just full of shit. Everyone just talks out the side of their neck. So my baby mom is on the phone telling me, oh yeah, I got a sponsor. I'm like, oh hell no. No, I'm not going to fall for that shit again. Like, no. She's like, come with me to a meeting. I'm like, a meeting of what? Like, no, that is not going to happen. She's all, come with me to one meeting, and if you don't like it, then I'll go to church with you every day, but I still have to do these meetings because it's part of my program. But, you know, if just come with me to one meeting. And I said, all right. I said, all right. And it was, I got out of jail July 14th of 2001. And it was probably the 18th when I finally went to a meeting with her. And I got in this meeting. It was a 12-step meeting. And there was a guy who was a secretary, and he was sharing, and I related to him. And after the meeting, she introduced me to him, and I asked him to be my sponsor. And we started working steps. We started getting busy. He got me into service, and I'm doing all this stuff. And then I did the crazy thing, and I started volunteering at the Central Coast Solano Club. And if you're new, don't do something like that. It occupied my time. But like I said, man, if it wasn't for them events, my daughter being born, I would have never gone into there. Her first year of her life was in the meetings. I almost got in a fight because someone goes, man, you need to shut your kid up. I said, what the fuck? And it was about a big old thing in the middle of a big meeting. I was about to, but I said, okay. And my sponsor's like, chill. Like, that dude's got issues. You know what I mean? And I didn't know that guy was dying too at the time. But anyways, besides the point, you know, I got busy early on. I started doing the things that we do around here, and I'm at the Alano Club volunteering, and some guys with a lot of time came in one day, and they're like, hey, let me get a coffee, they're like, hey, don't you got kids? And I had just got a year at the time, and back then people would always help each other out. So I was thinking maybe they're gonna help me out, maybe some toys for my kids or some hand-me-downs, whatever, I'll take it. And I was like, yeah, I got kids. It's all, why don't you get a fucking job, dude? And I was like, rude. Because I was there every day. They kept seeing me every day. And I just got a year. They would tell me, dude, you got kids, get a fucking job, man. And I got offended at first, but they were right. It's about time I pulled my weight around here. And so I went out and I got a job and I become a workaholic. And I just started working and working and working. And eventually I'm calling in on my commitments. I'm calling in on my volunteer, you know. And next thing you know, I got loaded. And I'll tell you why. It's because I wasn't willing to do the things that we do around here. I wasn't willing to call and check in on my sponsor. I wasn't willing to get to a meeting no matter what. You know, I wasn't willing to do the things that I was already taught. You know, they told me I started undoing the steps. I stopped being honest. And that's what happened. So I got some experience of what happens to people who stop going to meetings. Mm-hmm. I know what happens. I don't want to go back there. So I struggled, man. I struggled trying to get back. And eventually I knew I was going to end up in prison. Oh, my God. They tried sending me to detox. That didn't work. They tried sending me to a residential treatment. That didn't work, man. It just wasn't working for a guy like me. And I just said, you know, whatever, man. I know where I'm going to go, and I'm not cool with it, but it's going to happen because of the things I'm doing, you know. I don't know if I failed to mention this, but, you know, at 13 years old, when I decided to do them hard drugs, I also decided to start selling drugs, and that's all I've ever known. I don't know any other life other than selling drugs and drinking and getting loaded. I don't know anything else. Like, that's like, you know, all I know, pretty much all I can say is, I know how to add. I don't know how to multiply. Or, you know what I mean? Like, that's all I can do. I don't ask me to multiply something. I'm like, what? But that's all I was programmed to do. That's all I was shown. I don't know anything better. You know, I didn't think about, oh, maybe I should go back to school and get a degree. Or, you know, I didn't think about shit like that. So eventually I ended up in prison, man. And, I was scared shitless going to prison. I don't know what's going to happen. And I went, and everything I didn't want to happen happened, you know, and I ended up in a level 2 yard in Tehachapi, and I started sneaking off to this church. I got ordained while I was in that prison, and I swore that when I got out, I was going to be the next Billy Graham. Hallelujah, you know? I mean, the next Billy Graham. And about 6 hours after I paroled from that prison, man, I was drunk and loaded, and all those credentials I walked out with were gone. I have no idea. And that was a God shot. I don't think God wanted me to be no preacher or anything like that. But and so that started another cycle of me going in and out of prison. I graduated. I finally arrived at the place I never wanted to be. You know, it's like, you know, growing up, it's like, I'll never be like him, or I'll never be, you know, and I end up being that person, you know, the person I didn't want to be, I was becoming. And so I was having these little intervals between me going into prison, in and out of prison, that I remember where all my real friends were. And all my real friends were in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. All my real friends were over at the Lawton Club. So there was quite a few times where I would just drive by and, you know, look over to see if they're still over there, you know. And, you know, I'd be hiding and I'd still see the same people. And I'd be like, damn, you know. And them same people are still here today, which is awesome, you know. But like I said, I had them short intervals. And so in 2008, October 9th, 2008, I got caught up one more time. And my parole officer actually said, you know what, I'm going to let county deal with you. And I was like, all right. And so they sent me back to the Santa Barbara Rescue Mission. And I got busy when I got there. And so, mind you, the what was going on at that time was my daughter was sick. She was diagnosed. My Rosie, she was diagnosed. You know, my first term in 2004, my son was born. Excuse me, which was my daughter Rosie's brother. And we got the news that my daughter was diagnosed with leukemia. And man, as much as I wanted to stop, just that alone would stop anybody. You know, hello, your daughter's dying. Like, stop, stupid. You know, even God was saying, hey, dummy. My God calls me dummy. You know? Keeps it real. Hey, dummy, it's time to stop. And I just couldn't do it. And about the only honest thing I can give her was just a prayer. You know, what I've known from my God is I need to pray for her, and I prayed over her when she was in the hospital. And so I get caught up, and I just knew I wanted to write that relationship with that little girl. And also at the same time, while I'm at that rescue mission, when I got there, I had my three oldest. My three oldest were in foster care in L.A. And so, and they were going to be taken away. And they had called me. And even when I was in prison, they tried getting a hold of me. And so when I got to that program, I made sure that I reached out to them people. But the first day I got to that program, I asked them, I go, hey, can I go to a meeting? And they're like, no, you just got here and this and that. You need a... I was like, no, I need a meeting. Like, can I go, please? And I got to that meeting, and he finally let me go. And I just remember I was just so wrapped up into myself, and I had my head down. And I was like, I know there's somebody in this room. I need to ask him to be my sponsor. And finally this guy came up to me, and he's like, hey, Holmes, you got a nice jacket, eh? And I got out of jail, and I had this big old Dickies jacket on. Pretty sure I looked like Gangster of the Year, all dirty. Anyways, so, hey, Holmes, that's a nice jacket, eh? And I was like, yeah, all right, thanks. He goes, hey, man, that jacket reminds me of, you know, was it back in Northwest ISO? And I was like, all right, yeah, sure, okay, whatever. And he just kept going. I was ready to look up and tell him, hey, you know what? You need to back the fuck up, man. Get off me. You know, I'm going through my own shit right now. But when I looked up, he had exactly what I've been searching for. He had everything I'd wanted, and I was just looking at him. And what he had in his eyes was the peace I've been searching all my life for. And that was the first time I witnessed that. Yeah, I hear people talk about, you know, being in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, waiting for the miracle happen. When that miracle happens is when you see the lights come on in someone's eyes, when they finally hear something and they finally relate and they start nodding their head like, yeah, I can relate to that. You know, just looking in this guy's eyes, man, was everything I was looking for. I can relate. I asked that guy to be my sponsor, and his name was Andy, and he was a good dude, man. He taught me so much stuff, and he taught me a lot about the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. My home group at the time was Men Without Legs out in Santa Barbara. Wow. And that was a trip. When I go in there and say, hey, that's my home group. They say, right on, in unison. And there was anywhere from 70 to 100 guys every Thursday night at 8 o'clock at that meeting. And my first commitment at that meeting was I was a door greeter. And I just started the steps, and I started, you know, greeting people at the door, but I knew them all by their shoes. I wasn't at that point where I can just look at another man in the eyes. So I knew, hey, John, hey, PC, Bob, you know, what's up? You know, I just knew everybody, you know. But it was perfect for me because I am not an outspoken kind of person, you know what I mean? I don't just go up, hey, buddy, what's going on? You know, I'm not that kind of guy. But I started looking at another man in the eyes when I finally did my fourth and fifth. And when I went out, we went and did my fourth and fifth, and then I went to go do my commitment. That was on a Thursday night. And I remember going in there, and I started shaking people's hands, and I started looking them in the eyes. And that was such a weird, it was a trip. But because when I did that step, I felt I was a part of the crew. I felt I was part of the whole gang. I felt like I was part of the family. And I hadn't felt that way in years. In years. I like to say everything worked out perfect. During that recovery, I ended up getting custody of my kids. I moved back to Santa Maria, and I started working on this relationship with my angel, with my Rosie. And I was just trying to be the best dad I can be to that little girl. And I would suit up, and I would show up when I tell her, like, hey, I'll be there at 7. I'm going to be there at 7. You know, I told her I would come and sit down and watch movies with her. I'll come and sit down and watch movies with her. I didn't go there and start fucking with my phone or, you know, worrying about what other people were doing. I just spent that time that she always wanted, you know. She eventually went into remission, and she goes, and she was telling me they had this little port in her chest. She told me, when they take this port out, I'm going to feel like, you know, I'm going to live forever. And she goes, and when they do that, I want to go to Chuck E. Cheese. And shit happened. Her mother was supposed to take her, and shit happened. And it just, what happened was God lined it up for just me to take her. And I was able to go spend that time with her, and we had a damn good time. And then a couple months later, she had a relapse, and my father had passed away August 20th, and his last words when she went when she had the relapse, they sent her out back to I say Five East. Some people think Five East is where the Cuckoo's Nest is, but the Five East is actually the pediatrics and cottage in Santa Barbara. And they send her out there, and I was going to go see her, and my father called me up, and he said, and I told him, my mom had told him before she handed me the phone, and my father's last words to me were, "Mijo, you go be with your daughter right now. Go be with your mija." And I was like, "All right, Pops, I love you." Hung up. 2 days later, he passed away. And those were his last words to me. I could never forget him, you know. And then, so my daughter, she was just going through it. She was not doing good at all. She eventually passed away on November 24th of the same year, and which was a couple months later. And I remember when I got the news, they had called me. I was going to school at the time. I was going to Hancock. I was up at the Santa Maria Library, and I was getting a call, and I was like, "What the hell is going on?" And so I answered that call, and they had told me, "You need to get to the hospital. You need to get there right now. It's not good." And I was like, and I kind of had a feeling, and I've been going to school, and so I've been learning all this stuff. And so I remember I packed my shit. I got in the car, and I turned on the car, and I knew that at that moment, I'm either going to lock up and go in crisis and just be completely withdrawn from everything, or I'm going to turn over everything to God. And what happened was my prayer changed. I said, "I love you and I trust you no matter what. No matter what's going to happen when I get to the hospital, I believe it's your will." And I just hung on to that. I called my sponsor on the way. I said, "Hey, this is what's going on. I don't know what's going to happen." He said, "Call me when you walk out of the hospital." And I went in. I see my daughter for the last time. And that was hard. And I remember right after that, I came straight to a happy hour meeting. And a woman, she came and seen me right when I was leaving. She came outside, and I kind of told the story in there. And then she told me that, you know, a similar incident happened to her. And what happened right there and then is I didn't feel alone. And I didn't feel I had to be alone. I also heard that, you know, it's possible that what happened was your father passed away, so that way your daughter wasn't alone when she got to heaven. And I believe that with my, man, with every fiber of my being. God was doing for me, God was doing for her, you know. And I'm glad that both of them got to see me sober before they passed away, you know. What happened after that was I started letting things get to me, because people are like, "Whoa, Stan, how are you dealing with that? Like, oh my God, you're dealing with this so good, so well." And I think what happened was I just went numb. I think I just withdrew from everything. And I started letting the people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous get to my ego. Because I started thinking, yeah, I can walk through anything. I walked to my father. I walked to my daughter. And I didn't get drunk. I didn't get loaded. What's up? Yeah. And all the ego shit started getting to me. Because after that, not only that, was I taking on commitments. I was speaking up and down the coast, you know. And all that shit just got to my head. And one day, I don't know, I just snapped. Things weren't going my way. I was trying to work on this relationship that was just long over expired. And I'm trying to, you know, fit a square pole in a round pit, whatever it's called. Anyways, I was trying to do something like that. And it just, and it all got to me. And I knew everything. You know, some people say, "Oh, you ever ask somebody who decided to relapse that they prayed that day?" I prayed that day, but I don't think I meant any word of it, you know? And I set myself up, and I eventually got loaded. I got loaded, and it was hard for me to come back. All that pride, and I became comfortable with being able to pay that price. You know, I'm okay with it, you know? And I just continue to do that. And I stayed out there almost 2 years, but every day I wanted to come to a meeting. I came to a couple of meetings, but I'm like getting loaded right after. So I'm like, why am I lying to myself? Why am I cheating myself out of this? So it took what it took for me to get back. I like to share that I was a guy outside the liquor store over here, Santa Maria Liquor, trying to carry a message. I had the little big book, little pocket big book in my pocket. And I was short, like, I don't know, like 50 or 60 cents. And I seen some guys that I had seen in the rooms before. And I was like, hey, what's up? What are you guys doing? Hey, let me tell you what it shows. You know, let me read what it says right here. And the guy's like, dude, Stan, do you need a freaking dollar or two or what? Like, dude. Like, we just came out of the damn store with a bottle. But, you know, here, if you need this. And I was just like, man, but one thing I know is that everything in that book never lied to me. I don't know why I didn't go crazy and just kill myself, because I knew what the big book has shown me was real. And it's never led me astray. It tells me what to do to get well. It tells me what to do to stay sick. And it's never steered me wrong. It didn't lead me back to drink. You know what led me back to drink? This thing right here. This thing right here. All the guilt, the shame, all that stuff right here. You know what I mean? There's no people, places, or thing that's going to get me drunk. This thing is going to get me drunk. Like real quick. Like real fast. And if it doesn't get me drunk, it's going to get me restless, irritable, and discontent. I'm either going to act out and shoot somebody, kill somebody, or kill myself. You know? So I got to stay grounded right here. This is where God's at. God's not up here. No way. This is where K-Fuckett's going off, man. All the extra bass, extra treble, you know what I mean? I got to hear God right here. What happened is I continue doing the things that I love to do. And I say love because nothing else can get in the way with that. And I love to drink. I love to sell drugs. And I love to run the streets. And I'm doing all those things that I love. And eventually, God sent the Santa Maria PD and the Sheriff's Department to my house. I say, God did. And they kicked down the door one more time. And off to jail I go one more time. And I wish, man, for some reason I get to jail. And I'm the kind of guy who likes carrying a little extra with me. And I take it to jail with me. And I'm one of them kind of guys. And I started getting high in jail. And then I'm just like, man, what am I doing, man? Am I really trying to quit? If I can't even stop in jail, like every other time, it was like, I think it was like the first or second time I ever got high in jail. And I've been in jail quite a bit and prison. And I never did. I never bothered, you know. But I got out and I was really trying. I really wanted to do something different. I got a case now. They want to send me back to prison. They want to give me a program. They want to ship me off somewhere. And where I ended up was I had a friend who lived out in Goleta and I was hanging out with him, and eventually they're like, oh, I let him kind of believe that I didn't have no more money or anything, and they were like, oh, well, you gotta go sleep in your car or something, like you can't stay here no more. And I'm like, whatever. My car was broke down, and so I went to go stay in this park out there. It's called Gersh Park. And today, like I said, we went out there and went to go look. And man, it was just like I was saying, man, earlier, that it was just like, had everything at my disposal. Had everything at my disposal. And that's where I chose to stay. You know, I could have afforded like the most expensive motel room somewhere or whatever. I just had money, had everything at my disposal, but I chose to stay right there. And it hit me. That's where I go back there because that's where I had that moment of clarity. And it was like, hey, Stan, you're dying, man. You're dying. You're by yourself out here. You ain't got nothing going on, you know? And the fear of being disconnected from this God of my understanding is what really kicked it in. And I knew he was there, but I could not feel him no matter how much I wanted to. And I decided to come back and go to court. And they sentenced me to an outpatient program. And I tried for like 4 days, man. I tried while I was going and doing the intake and doing all these assessments and all that stuff. I tried staying sober, man. And I was just like, couldn't do it, man. By the fourth day, I was shaking, baking, sweating. And I was like, I've never felt this bad before. you know, and the air hurt my skin. I heard people share that before. I was like, oh my God, the air hurt my skin. No, the fucking air and the water hurt my skin. Even the sweat that was dripping off, man, it hurt my skin. And that fourth day, I've been telling everybody, man, just quit calling me, quit bugging. And this one guy just kept calling while I'm in there at this last appointment. You know, it was a Friday, you know, and then it was going to be Memorial Day weekend. And when I left that office, I just said, man, fucking come over, and started drinking. And that was my last weekend out. And I remember, Monday was a holiday, and Tuesday I went in and I pretended like I didn't call when I really called and I knew there was testing. But I went in there and I told on myself, I said, you know what, man, I can't do this no more. I cannot do this no more. And he said, why don't you go sit in this group over here? And I was like, all right. And I went and I sat in that group, and I was in that group, and everyone in there is not serious. You know, if you go to an outpatient program out here and you're court ordered, nobody in that room is serious. And I was just sitting there and I'm listening, and I'm like, you know what, Stan, you know, if you're serious about your recovery, you know where you need to go. And I had no idea where the meetings were. And it was a Wednesday night. So that was Wednesday night. I went to that group and I did it again. And I said, you know what? I can't do this. I need to get to a meeting. And this is May 30th, 2013. This is where God lined up the people that he needed to line up in order to get me to a meeting that night. I don't know why I didn't drink that whole day. I still had everything at my disposal. I don't know why I didn't drink that night or that whole day. I remember walking out of that group, and it was already like late. And I was at the stoplight, and it said, you know, it was red, but I see my daughter down the road, because I was only a block and a half away from my house. I see my daughter down the road and walking to her car, and so I decided to jaywalk, you know. Yeah, I'm a jaywalker. There's a whole paragraph on me. But, you know, I ran over there, and she was just about to pull off. And I tell you what, seconds and inches, I heard about it in these rooms. Seconds and inches, I could have missed the whole trip, man. I could have missed the whole thing of me getting here. And I stopped her. She's like, what, Dad? And I was like, where are you going? She's like, I'm going to a meeting, Dad. In other words, I'm going to a meeting, you asshole. She had every right to feel that way towards me. And I was like, hey, you think it's all right if I go with you? Yeah, I guess. Get in. I get there. I get to that meeting. Billy's the first person that greeted me when I got to that meeting. Gave me the hug that just hugged out the tears out of my eyes. I got in that meeting, and there was a gentleman, Jason, his name was Jason. I'd known him from the Junkyard Dogs, and I knew I had to ask that guy to be my sponsor. And I couldn't wait till the end of that meeting. I'm just like, man, and he seen me, he was happy to see me. And I went up and I asked him, I go, hey, you think you'll be my sponsor? He told me, dude, I'd be honored to be your sponsor. And from that moment until this, man, that obsession of wanting to drink had been lifted. But not the obsession to want to act out in self-centered behaviors. And that's what these steps are here for. Because it was all, everything that was going on up here, you know. I woke up the next morning and I had a strong desire to want to stay sober more than I can fucking breathe. Excuse my language, only way I know how to explain it. And I have yet to wake up a morning and not have that feeling. And I think the reason why I continue to have that feeling is that I'm more than willing to do what the next man won't to stay sober. You know, the action. It's not about the book. It's not about how much I learned about everything about Alcoholics Anonymous. It's about the action that I'm taking that's kept me here. You know, I beat this program up when I got here, and I still beat it up today, man. I'm more than willing to sit down with any man who hasn't gone through the first 164 pages, who hasn't worked all 12 of these steps. I'm more than willing to do that. You know, and I that's something that's very foreign to me, because I'm selfish and self-centered. I want it now. Here, I'll pay you to work the steps for me. I'm one of them kind of guys. I'll break you off a little something. Work them steps for me. Bring me the paper. Let me examine it, you know. You know, and even when people want to take my inventory, hey, let me get a copy of that so I can share it with my sponsor. Because I love when people take my inventory, man. That's some good stuff. It keeps me from writing, you know. If other people are taking my inventory, that just keeps me from writing it, right? But But one thing I learned is it's a promise I've been holding on to. There's quite a few promises in that big book, but there's one that I always hold on to. It says, see to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. And that question at first, how do I know my relationship with him is right? Because we can always think our relationship with him is right. But how do we know our relationship with him is right? And how do I know? It's because I'm able to practice these principles in all my affairs. When I'm able to do those steps, no matter what. For some reason, man, when I'm with the new guy and I'm working steps with him, I always ask him, hey, did you get yours? Because I'm getting mine. I'm getting that feel good. When I'm sharing out of the book. When I'm hearing them share out of the book. You know, it's like, man, I get that feel good. Everything I was looking for in that bottle and the sack, man, I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't imagine I'd be sitting here saying that, you know? I probably would have called someone a lame early on, like, oh my God, this guy's lame. How dare you say that? But I do, man. I do. You know, it's like every time I'm helping somebody out, and it could be simple, man, even if I hold the door open for some, it's like me getting outside of myself is nothing short of a miracle because I'm selfish and self-centered. You know, I don't know anything else. I don't know any other way to live, you know? Thank you, Roman, for being here tonight. You know, when I started this whole process, I had to go to the Sober Living, and he gave me a chance to go there. And now how I pay back is I go back and I still sponsor guys in them sober homes. You know, my sponsor came out. He would come out. We worked steps and did all that. And when I was done working the steps, my first sponsee was in the sober home, you know. And I just kept doing that, man. I'm more than willing to do that. You know, my life changed. Shit, man. I want some, you know, I'm willing to give that back, man. That's the ripple effect here in Alcoholics Anonymous, is when I'm able to give back what was so freely given to me and watch other people grow in their recovery, you know. And so, you know, man, I don't know. There's just so much to say about Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm forever grateful, man. I couldn't imagine. I feel like today I'm on borrowed time. It's like reality's starting to hit. It's like I'm on borrowed time. You know, God gave me this chance. You know, he could have took me a long time ago. But I'm starting to realize he's given me that chance because he wants me to do something for him. You know, he's been like, yeah, what's in it for me now? You know what I mean? I'll help you out. What's in it for me? You know what I mean? And I'm like, God, wherever you want me, wherever you need me. I go to work every day. Wherever you want me, wherever you need me. Whichever clients, you know. And that's another thing about my life today. It's like I'm working a job that alcoholic like me should not be working at all. I should not be working in the mental health field. No way. No way. I shouldn't, man. You know? And I got this long platinum record, and for some reason, like, yeah, go ahead, go help them people. I'm like, dude, do you know where I've been? My coworkers have no idea. They're kind of like, oh, stop it. But my boss is like, you know what, you're a little comfortable with these people over here. She kind of knows my story, but when she says that, I'm like, you have no idea, lady. But yeah, so I think this morning we were talking about the miracles, about how Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't hold a monopoly on miracles. But for some reason, man, I don't feel anything less than a miracle. I don't think I don't deserve this. If I was to get what I deserve, I'd either be locked up or boxed up. And I thank God that he had another plan for me, you know. And in 8 years, this is huge, man. Like, I'm still tripping. Like, after I got 1 year, I was like, no way. Like, you know, but like I said, it's because I keep coming back and I keep doing the things that we do around here, no matter what. No matter how bad life gets, no matter how much K-Fuckit wants to put extra bass, and I love bass, you know what I mean? It doesn't matter how much that stuff goes off, man. I wouldn't want life any other way. You know, I've gone through a lot of tough stuff, and a lot of, you know, hard things. You know, I lost my mother, you know. First thing I did this morning when I left the house is my girlfriend gave me my chip, and I went down and I went to go show my mom my chip. Every chip I get, I go down there and I show her, Mom, this is my chip. You know, when my mom passed away, first experience I really had with being close to God was my mom was went into a coma, and I went out. I went to go see her when they finally moved her from a home, and then they moved her to the hospital. And I went early in the morning, man. I made sure I got there early before everyone got there, and I prayed over my mother. And when I was done praying, I cried, man. I cried all the way until my eyes were dry, and I felt a peace like I've never known before. I felt that peace right here. And that peace was, I'm willing to let my mother go. Because she was like the one that, like I said, man, I'm a mama's boy. You know what I mean? I'm a tough, real tough guy. Still living at mom's. But, I felt that peace. I was able to let it go. Because I thought I was going to have a hard time letting her go. And I knew, and I was okay that she was going to pass. And I kept telling my mom while she was in that coma fighting. I said, Mom, it's okay. I'm going to be okay. Because I'm her baby. You know, she's worried about her mijo not, you know, being able to take care of his kids. But I was telling her, Mom, I'm going to be okay. You know, so every time something good happens in my life, when I got my certificates for drug and alcohol, when I started getting these jobs, I would tell Mom, this is for you. You know, so every year I get my chip, I take it down there, and I said, Mom, here's my chip. You know, thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, because I didn't learn that on my own. It was you people who showed me that. Everything I know today is because of someone else that shared it in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I love when people say the same shit over and over and over. I need to hear it, man. I need to hear it. I need to say it too, man. I'll say the same shit over and keep coming back. It works when you work it. You know what I mean? I need to keep doing that because it's what's kept me here. And the reason why I need here is because I got to keep it simple no matter what. Can't complicate it all the time and just pile everything on top of each other. So I'm totally grateful. And if you're new, man, or fairly new, just know that this thing works, man. But you got to do it, man. This is not a bench warming program. God, I wish I could just sit here and get all the good stuff, you know, and nice stuff started happening to me just from coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You got to put in the work, you know. And the one thing an alcoholic does not want to look is on the inside. No alcoholic wants to look on the inside. Nobody wants to own up to their shit. Nobody wants to take responsibility for their life. But I noticed the moment I was able to let everything go and take responsibility for my life, change started to happen. So keep coming back. That's all I got. Thank you.